This is your weekly checkup with Howard Feldman and Dr. Anton Myberg, where medical innovation meets human understanding.
It is 6 minutes past the hour of six. I'm Howard Feldman. A very, very good evening. Tonight on the Weekly Checkup, we're tackling a condition that seems to be everywhere. It's ADHD. Not long ago, most people associated ADHD with a fidgety child who couldn't sit still in class. Today, adults are being diagnosed in record numbers. Social media is flooded with videos explaining what this is. Parents are wondering if their child has it. Adults are looking back on their lives and asking whether ADHD may explain the years of struggles with focus, organizations, impulsivity, relationships, work, and even self-esteem. So what is going on? Are we finally understanding ADHD properly? Are we identifying people who were previously overlooked? Or are we turning normal human behavior into a medical diagnosis? Perhaps most importantly, what happens after the diagnosis? Does medication help? Are there alternatives? And what can parents, teachers, employers, and families do? Joining me, as always, is Dr. Anton Myberg. How are you?
Good evening. I hope you can manage to focus for this session tonight.
Well, in fact, I do take my medication at 4 a.m. Don't count on it. Let's start with the beginning. What actually is ADHD?
So ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. This is a biological and it's a neurodevelopmental condition which fundamentally alters how the brain regulates attention, executive functioning, and emotions. So it is a misleading name.
Why?
It's not a literal lack of attention. It's an inability to regulate where that attention goes. So,
You've just answered one of my questions.
So it's a chronic medical question which is rooted in brain chemistry and genetics. So therefore, it's actually not a character flaw or a lack of discipline or laziness. And in order to understand, you've got to understand what actually happens in the brain of somebody with ADHD. So research has shown that the ADHD brain structurally and chemically works very differently from a neurotypical brain. And this is because of what we call a dopamine deficiency. So the brain typically struggles to produce or transport dopamine. And this is a chemical messenger which is really responsible for motivation, for reward anticipation, and sustained focus. It then also has difficulty with executive dysfunction. So there's a weaker function in the prefrontal cortex of the brain. That prefrontal cortex governs planning, organization, your emotional control, and impulse suppression. And lastly, it works on interest and an interest-driven system. So when the dopamine's low, your nervous system relies on immediate interest, urgency, novelty, or intense emotion to activate rather than the simple willpower that you've got. And there's different types of ADHD. So it's not just an ADHD single thing.
So many questions in what you're saying, because it really does mean that if it's sort of a dopamine deficiency, without medication, people can, or kids in particular, can harm themselves.
Well, that's very important. So that's why it was also broken up into different types of ADHD.
Okay, so we need to, because it is already 10 minutes past 6, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I want to ask you the difference between ADD and ADHD, and then we'll start going a little bit deeper into all of these issues. If you have questions, I should have told you this before, but I've told you my medication is already worn off. If you have questions, 0618951019. Share your experience with us, with either yourself as an adult, with a child, and ask your questions. 0618951019, 10 past 6. This is the Weekly Checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 11 minutes past the hour of 6. I'm Howard Feldman, and this is the Weekly Checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. We're talking ADHD. Send your questions, 0618951019. What is the difference? Is there a difference between ADD and ADHD?
So ADD is actually an outdated clinical term that actually fell away in 1987. The term has officially been replaced by ADHD.
So there's only one term for it.
So ADD was attention deficit disorder, and it was colloquially used to describe individuals who struggled with focus but were quiet and calm. The attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is the current all-encompassing medical diagnosis. So this covers individuals with focus issues, hyperactive behaviors, or a combination of both. And that's why it's important to break it up into the different types. So you get what we call a predominantly inattentive presentation. And that was what was referred to initially as the ADD. So these presentations present with people with struggles primarily with an internal focus. They may present as quiet or daydreamy, meaning that their struggles are actually frequently overlooked. They struggle to sustain focus on routine or mundane tasks, and they've got a chronic forgetfulness, and they're frequently losing daily items like keys or wallets. So these people generally have extreme difficulty with organization, time management, and following multi-step instructions. The second type is what we call a predominantly hyperactive impulse presentation, and that's characterized by physical restlessness and rapid, unfiltered decision-making. Constantly fidgeting, tapping, or inability to sit still for long periods. There's almost like an internal sense of restlessness, like that you've been driven by motor energy. And they have very impulsive actions like interrupting conversations, blurting out answers, or even spending money recklessly.
Really? That's an ADHD thing?
That's a predominantly hyperactive impulse presentation of ADHD.
Wow, that
is... And then there's a combined presentation which meets criteria for both of these.
Right.
So, I mean, you get a lot of overlooked symptoms as well because... You know, when you look at a school surrounding or a school system, the school focuses heavily on sitting still. ADHD in real life affects nearly every aspect of your nervous system. So there's problems with hyperfocus, emotional dysregulation, working memory issues, and a whole host of other things.
So what actually happens in the brain of somebody with ADHD?
So you've got to understand, as I said, ADHD is a medical condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's specifically a neurodevelopmental disorder, and it drives behavioral challenges and creates learning difficulties. So we can break it up in different categories. If you look at the root cause, which is a medical condition, there's a deficiency or imbalance in your neurotransmitters like the dopamine and noradrenaline. These regulate focus, reward, and impulse control. If you look at the brain structure, if you actually image the brain, you'll see differences in the activity of brain regions responsible for executive functioning, such as we said, the prefrontal cortex. And officially, it's recognized as a medical or a psychiatric disorder all over the world. If you look at the expression part, the behavioral impact that it has, it affects impulse control and it manifests as behavioral challenges. So even though the behaviors are neurological, the person cannot simply choose to turn them off. There's common behaviors with it, fidgeting, tapping, interrupting others, and there's a huge misconception behind it because it does impact a person's conduct. It's frequently mislabeled as poor parenting, laziness, or bad discipline, though it's actually a self-regulation deficit. And the last one is what a lot of people understand is a consequence of all of this, and that's where we see a learning difficulty. So it's not a specific learning difficulty or disability like dyslexia. It doesn't impact a person's intrinsic intelligence or the ability to process different types of information. However, it does interfere with the mechanics of how they learn. So it causes a working memory deficit because due to their poor organization or their inability to listen for long periods, they don't hear certain things or certain fundamentals, and then they land up being behind in classwork or things like that.
So they're either focused, not able to focus, or they're hyper-focused. Rowan says, if ADHD is a dopamine deficiency, does that mean that people who have this condition are more prone to addiction, the satisfaction of which brings about a dopamine rush?
Yes, if you've got a hyper-focus and the impulse side of it, then
you're on.
That's with spending money is a dopamine thing. It's a reward center.
That is, it is absolutely fascinating. And Anton L. says, is ADHD a genetic, environmental, or a combination?
It's genetic and neurodevelopmental.
Okay, we'll come to that. And how's it connecting to ASD? and sensory issues. Let's carry on and then we can come to these questions. Bianca, thank you for your question as well. We're going to come to them. I just want to try and get through a little bit more of the theory and then we can come to it. I've also got so many questions that I want to ask him. Okay, so the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, the name itself, is that's obviously a little bit misleading then.
Yeah, I would say so, because you know you're basing a whole condition on how it looks to an outside observer rather than actually that it's a function in the brain that's causing all of this. So it's not essentially an attention deficit. They don't have a shortage of attention, rather they have difficulty in regulating and directing their attention. So the reality is your brain is now, as we said, struggling to manufacture dopamine for low stimulation tasks like administration, tedious paperwork, homework, and therefore it makes it very hard for that person to focus. But when there's an activity that they find highly engaging or enjoyable, they can experience hyperfocus. They concentrate for long periods of time, for hours, and they don't even realize that time's passing. So there's a huge inconsistency with all of this.
Yes, it's actually so interesting because, I mean, I'm going to ask you my talk about my own experience because I was only diagnosed as an adult later. But the way I can describe it, the first time I took medication, the best way to describe it is within 20 minutes of taking the Concerta, and it was a low dose, I felt like the mist cleared.
It's like the brain fog is gone.
It got, but I actually could feel it lifting. It was the weirdest experience I've ever had.
So if we could go back in time and take away that Concerta from you, everything would be great.
Everybody around me would be happier, but no. Okay, but why does it feel like everybody suddenly has ADHD?
Look, I think there's a lot of social media awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pressure on children in school to achieve. So we're now getting children who are being assessed more regularly by psychologists or by teachers who are saying, hold on, these children aren't concentrating or they aren't doing what they should be doing. And there's a difference here that there's no sort of consequence of actions, and therefore they're looking to see what is causing these problems. So if you look on any social media hack, if you go into your feed for X or for Instagram, as soon as you type in one thing about ADHD, you'll be flooded with all these messages.
So it's almost become trendy, which is dangerous, obviously, for because these medications that people are now using are not a joke. So are diagnoses genuinely increasing, or are we just recognizing it more?
Yeah, I definitely think we are recognizing it much more at the moment. Mm. It's definitely something that's been there for a very long time. And because of the fact that we now much more prone to look for issues. You know, we're much more educated. I'll bring up the same thing from COVID. During COVID, everyone became essentially doctors because they all were educated and understanding what is going on in the environment. Now people are involved in their children's lives more so than they were during when we were youngsters. So it's not that our parents did things wrong, but there wasn't facilities to enable and to help us in those days diagnose things. And also, it was classified as ADD. So it was essential one focus thing. Either you had no focus, or something. If you were quiet and calm and didn't do anything, you weren't considered into that thing. You were masking your symptoms. And that's why a lot of girls were also missed, because they go into that quiet masking phase where they get missed in this whole process.
So interesting. And also, when you think about our grandparents, we don't think of anybody who had ADD. But at the same time, I guess many of them didn't go on to reach their full potential. It is 6:20. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg. We'll be back just after this.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 6:21. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg, tonight talking about ADD and ADHD, rather. Send us your questions, 0618951019. Bianca says, in 2003, I was put on antidepressant for ADHD. It gave me such headaches, and I didn't go on anything else after that. I can be quiet, but it's not because of ADHD. I don't lose things. I sometimes find I get over generally, but in crowds, it seems to mess with me. So very, very much what Dr. Myberg has been describing. Craig says, I've been diagnosed with adult ADHD. I'm a CA who could study for hours and be hyper-focused and succeed and continue to succeed in my field. I've never taken any medication for it. And because I do what I love and I've got various business interests, it suits me, etc. So it's very, very interesting because obviously somebody like that is managing his ADHD.
Very well, it sounds like.
Okay, so that is, I mean, I think that is irrelevant. Are we medicalizing normal behavior?
Sure. I think that's quite a tough question because I don't think there's a simple yes or no answer for that. Remember that the ADHD exists on a continuum of human traits. So if there's a rising diagnosis, that reflects both a genuine underdiagnosis in the past and then an increasing pressure to medicalize normal variations and behavior. So if we say yes, we are, we're medicalizing normality, then we're looking at tracks like distractibility, high energy, impulsivity, and those can generally be normal human variations.
Look, we get more stressed, we can't concentrate well.
And there's so many key drivers of that, like modern schooling drives that.
But isn't Craig's message actually the perfect example? Yeah. Here's somebody who's been diagnosed with ADHD but is not medicated.
Yeah.
Being aware of it, maybe at some point he might need it, but right now he doesn't. There's your continuum.
And that's picked up through our school system. You know, the schools require the kids to sit still, focus the long periods, and they often penalize the high energy or slower executive development. So it's different with adults because with adults there's inability to remain constantly productive or organized in a world that's hyperconnective, and that's viewed as a medical flaw rather than a standard. So now if we go argue against that, so we're saying we're recognizing it's a valid disorder, then we understand that ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition that causes severe lifelong impairment if it's left untreated. And it's not just about being distracted. Your clinical diagnosis does require that symptoms cause severe functional impairment across many areas in life, such as failing out of school, losing jobs, or even relationship distress. And as I said earlier, your brain imaging and genetic studies consistently show that people with ADHD have differences in their brain structure, and it has been historically underdiagnosed due to groups that do not display that outward hyperactivity. So for those with severe symptoms, if you give them medical and behavioral treatments, this can be highly, highly effective.
Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. Are we because I've already asked you that, but is it a problem that we're self-diagnosing using, as you've said, social media? Looking at our kids, we say, oh, there must be ADHD.
So, yeah, I mean, we definitely are, because if you look at why people are over-diagnosing it, it's because of social media. So people are looking at, let's say, TikTok, okay? And that provides this overwhelming misinformation. More than half of the feeds on ADHD and the videos you get from there are untrue. They give misleading information. And they call it, I think it's called the echo chamber algorithm. So TikTok has an algorithm that pushes more of the same content users who interact with it. So if you watch a video about focus issues, your feed will be flooded with ADHD content. And that creates a false impression that your condition that you're seeing is incredibly common.
Everybody's suffering from it. So then what should parents look for in their children?
So they've got to look for a persistent pattern, a pattern of inattention, the hyperactivity, and the impulsivity. And it should be more severe than in other children of the same age. And generally, in order to diagnose it, it should appear before the age of 12, should be there for at least 6 months, and disrupt the child's life in more than one setting, for example, both at home and at school. And it can present in different ways. So the signs of inattention are often missed. So these children present with an inattentive presentation, and those ones aren't usually disruptive. Their symptoms are frequently missed or mistaken for being lazy or daydreaming. And when you look at a child that makes careless mistakes, because they frequently miss details in schoolwork because they're daydreaming, or they struggle to sustain focus because they lose concentration during lectures. When they seem not to listen, they're daydreaming. And, you know, they fail to follow through with certain chores because they easily get sidetracked. When you're looking at kids with signs of hyperactivity, this is the most visible and well-known type of ADHD.
And they're probably easier to manage.
And it's more so boys than girls to pick up.
Oh, we've had a bunch of those. Yeah. We'd wake up to them throwing a ball against a wall repeatedly.
I can hear from your tone of voice.
I don't know. They're very relaxed about it. Look, the truth is they probably got it from me, so it's hard
It is genetic, so I'm saying that. But I'm saying that hyperactivity, you know, they fidget constantly. They get up out of their seat. They can't sit still in their seat. They're climbing things inappropriately. You see all these kids climbing up trees, which is very unsafe. they can't have like quiet play. It's almost like they're driven by a motor.
Dangerous. They could really, really harm themselves.
Whereas then you get another like subtype of the ones with impulsivity. And these people like lack self-control. They act without thinking. They blurt out answers. They cut into lines. They butt into other children's games. They snatch toys. And they've got a severe, extreme impatience. It's basically like being at a brocha at a shul, actually.
everybody's
impulsive. And also, they take dangerous risks. They can run into the street without looking or climb these high things.
Because they haven't got that impulse control.
They haven't got the impulse control, yeah.
Jenny's saying, is there a link between ADHD and narcolepsy?
So, not necessarily, because narcolepsy is a condition where you're actually going to fall asleep. It's not because you're daydreaming, because you can't focus. It works in a different area of the brain.
Okay. One more question before we move on. The kids that are anxious often can't concentrate in class. How easy is it to confuse a kid suffering from anxiety? And all of us can't concentrate when we're anxious. We all talk about that. We can't read a book when we're feeling so anxious because our brain isn't, you know, and that's easy to confuse.
So a lot of the time when you go deeper into the child's like growth pattern and what's happening with them, if you treat the underlying ADHD, that anxiety goes away, because that anxiety is there because they can't focus. They keep missing things. They're worried that they're going to be doing things wrong.
The ADHD could be the cause, in other words.
A lot of the time, that is the cause of that.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I see Sipora says, good evening, Howard and Anton. A while ago, Howard, you interviewed a gentleman about a condition called Mr. Hurry. My beloved husband definitely has a Mr. Hurry syndrome. Is this a form of ADHD?
I suppose you could break it into a bit of impulsivity and hyperactivity, so potentially.
Yes, just don't go medicating him, Tsipora. Yeah. Not yet. Okay, what happens, so we're talking about the signs that parents could look for, teachers, I think you've spoken about. You just alluded to this, I just want to come back to it. Boys and girls affected differently?
Yeah, so that's actually very, very interesting, because there's definitely a big difference between boys and girls, okay? Mm-hmm. And that comes through the symptom presentation. So boys, they tend to exhibit these externalizing symptoms. They're hyperactive, they're impulsive, they're physical, they run around, fidget, interrupt. They display this disruptive classroom behavior. With girls, they lean towards this internalizing symptoms. So their hyperactivity will manifest verbally. In other words, they can be overly talkative, don't get me started, or mentally an overactive, restless mind rather than the physical sort of presentation. So they're more likely to present with that inattentive subtype, which looks like they're daydreaming, forgetful, or have cognitive disengagement. And that was very much missed because it's considered
because they were well behaved in a way.
So girls are more prone to what we call masking or coping mechanisms. They push themselves to achieve good grades or appear compliant at school so they can fit into societal expectations, and this hides their own internal struggles until they reach burnout.
What happens if ADHD is left unattended?
It can severely, severely disrupt areas of a person's life. It can lead to chronic and medical health struggles, relation failures, and even financial instability. It's a lifelong, and I'm going to keep pushing that, it's a lifelong neurodevelopmental condition. If you ignore the symptoms, you're going to force an individual to develop harmful coping mechanisms or even experience profound decline in overall well-being. So they'll, from a mental health and self-esteem point of view, they'll have chronic self-doubt. They feel like for years they've been struggling to meet expectations or lead a persistent sense of inadequacy and low self-esteem, rather than the fact that they actually don't have these issues. They've got a medical condition that needs to be treated. So a lot of these people who aren't treated land up abusing substances. More than 20%
right.
of adults
that was, I think, Roland's point
seek
earlier.
Treatment for substance
what, how many?
Use.
What percent?
More than 20%.
Wow.
Having underlying ADHD, and a lot turn to alcohol, nicotine, or other recreational drugs to medicate themselves. The other sort of consequences of not treating it is your career and financial strain. So you can get job instability and, of course, financial impulsivity. You won't track your banking balances. You have chronic overspending. Mm. You forget to pay bills. And then from an emotional point of view, strained relationships, you get a communication breakdown. So you almost like zone out, and it's not an epileptic zone out. There's a lapse in attention during a conversation, which can make your partners, your friends feel ignored or undervalued. So there's a lot of emotional volatility that comes with this because it's difficult for them to regulate strong emotions, impulses, and that can also spark frequent arguments. And then lastly, you look at physical health because of it. And you can get accidents and injury because of it, because of the inattentiveness and because of the impulsivity and poor lifestyle habits. You don't maintain a balanced diet. You don't do consistent exercise. You have poor sleep hygiene.
Oh, stop it.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Am I just ticking all your boxes?
No, yeah, well, so far, that's why I stopped you, because I don't want any more boxes. So here's the question. I mean, you mentioned that it's lifelong.
Yeah.
But we've had a few people, myself included, that's only diagnosed as an adult. Does this mean you had it as a child?
Yeah.
You just had systems. I mean, because I didn't particularly struggle at school. I went to varsity. I did my LLB. Yeah,
so speak for yourself. Like, I definitely... Like
maybe
when
I could
I look
have done
back,
better.
When I look back, I definitely had severe ADHD. I used to daydream.
Do you have adult ADHD?
Definitely.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, I used to daydream. I used to sit and read comics instead of learning. I used to have to catch up on lessons because I would miss half a lesson because I was thinking about other thoughts or going in other places. And that was never diagnosed. Why? Because I could compensate. I could make up the time and I was able to
And you obviously do
execute
good, well enough
things
that,
no one would pick it
in
up.
In the problem area. So you manage to compensate for it. It's really interesting. Share your experience with us. 061-895-1019. Just talk to me about modern schooling and how that impacts children with ADHD.
So, you know, it goes entirely against your natural neurological wiring of children. So your conventional classroom, it's built around traits of a neurotypical brain.
Mm.
You need capacity for forced attention, long periods of stillness, and highly developed intrinsic executive function. Now, the ADHD brain is more interest-driven rather than importance-driven. So,
to say that again, it's more interest-driven over importance.
Rather than importance.
In other words, you've got to learn all of your subjects. But actually, what I'm really interested in is that.
That so, pathway, because okay, that's what's getting my dopamine levels up.
That's how you, because I guess you hyper-fixate, you hyper-focus on something.
So, right. So your modern education actually inadvertently creates an environment of constant friction. So many of the scholars or the students experience school not as a place of learning, but as a daily exercising cognitive exhaustion. And, you know, our schools expect physical stillness. It's such a sedentary design that the schools demand children to sit at desks for up to 6 or 7 hours a day. You know, hyperactivity, on the other hand, is frequently mislabeled as a defiance. It's disrespect or intentional disruption.
Have we gotten better at it?
We or they? Like, who's we? Like, you know?
I'm saying the general education school system. I mean, I know some of the schools will allow the kids to have a fidget, like a fidget thing. I mean, yes, then it irritates the teachers, then they stop it. But like, is there a way that schools are dealing with it so that
I think if you go back 10 years ago, I think, yes, the answer is yes. Is it still being overdiagnosed? Yes. Do we get teachers that just can't handle it and just want to overdiagnose it? Yes, but the majority of teachers are able to pick up that there's something not okay. When it's missed, it's a big miss. It's a big miss for them.
And it can have a real impact on the kids. Okay, so I'm actually interested to hear from you, 061-895-1019. What was written on your school report every year? I mean, did that talk to it? Did it talk to yours?
No, it actually didn't. You know,
so you masked it.
I masked it. I was very good at masking it because I was able to execute
problem.
Other functions.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It really is a problem. It is 18:36. I want to move on to adult ADHD. Send us your questions if you have any questions about the kids, 061-895-1019, about adults as well. So I alluded to this before. My story was that clearly I had this my whole life. I was managing it. And then I had two real traumatic incidents. Both of them were robberies, and my ADHD just went through the roof. It was probably 14 years ago, and I've been on medication since. There is no chance I will function during the day without medication, which is bizarre because before that, I didn't need it.
You didn't think you needed it.
Maybe I didn't think I needed it. Does that ADHD look different? Does adult ADHD look different to kids' ADHD?
It definitely does, because that outward physical hyperactivity decreases, and it generally transforms into an internal restlessness or severe executive dysfunction with emotional volatility, as I said earlier.
Right.
So children with ADHD will climb on furniture or disrupt a classroom, but adults are more likely to struggle with like invisible battles like chronic disorganization, admin work, time blindness. I mean, we all know people that just can't get anywhere on time. Extreme mental fatigue from trying to mask their symptoms. So when we talk about the internal restlessness of the adult equivalent, they have racing thoughts. So they do constantly fidget, and they've got an inability to relax or enjoy holidays. So you take adults who are on holidays,
oh,
they can't sit
word.
Still.
I am so bad at holidays.
Yeah, that's an adult equivalent to ADHD.
Wow.
When you actually aren't able to sit still and just breathe. You have to find something to do all the time.
I have to write an article. I have to go.
And that's an internal restlessness.
Ooh.
And even your impulsivity, like quitting jobs abruptly or impulse spending, interrupting conversations.
Can't do that.
Driving too fast.
Don't
these
do that.
Are things
no.
like that, you know.
Mm.
And then the other one is, which I know many people like this, many marriages, people suffer with these type of things. Not mine, of course.
Mm.
Executive dysfunction, like chronically messy homes, you know. Like, those are things. And you get partners, generally one is messy and the other one's highly organized. So there's something called a doom pile phenomenon.
A doom pile phenomenon.
And that's when adults pile things like visually around the house, because if they put them in a drawer, then they won't exist. They're out of sight and out of mind.
Wow.
Yeah. And they also get a task paralysis. In other words, they get overwhelmed by these multi-step tasks, like cleaning a room or filling out paperwork, and that leads to extreme procrastination. So there's also chronic forgetfulness, like frequently losing daily things like your keys. It's not just losing your keys once in a while.
Right.
Or missing critical appointments, misjudging time. There's operating in a two time zone where you operate only in a now and not now. So there's no in between that, you know. So they either result in being chronically late or hours too early. I mean, I used to call the hours too early person a yakker, but I mean, maybe that's an adult ADHD, you know.
Oh gosh.
Of course, more importantly is the boredom. So, you know, they focus on mundane things and unstimulating tasks like, once again, admin, data entry, chores. These become critically unimportant to them.
More than that is, I sometimes feel that unimportant or bored things that make me bored, actually hurt me. I'm not even joking. I find it very, very difficult to sit through something that is boring.
I don't think you use the word hurt. I just think your brain isn't able to manage that.
I can't manage it.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. It's almost like you hear you say this.
It's like there's like you're saying you're getting a profound emotional pain.
I actually do feel it from being bored. That's why I will always take a book with me, let's say, to shul, because I can't handle being bored.
Yeah, I hear it.
It is 6:41. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Marburg. We're talking ADHD, and we'd love your questions and your comments. 061-895-1019.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 6:42. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Myberg. Roland says, so much of what the doc says is true. I compensate even today by being painfully pedantic and a perfectionist in my work. If I don't, I will be a disaster. People think my perfectionism is because of my cultural background, but that is only part of it. Can people with ADHD be successful?
Definitely. So there are certain superpowers that come with ADHD that drive the success.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get somebody who hyper-focuses and they become deeply interested in a subject, adults with ADHD can focus intensely for hours and they outproduce other people. In crisis management, the ADHD brain will thrive on high-stress, fast-paced situations, and that makes them excellent in emergencies. They have this typical out-of-the-box thinking. So they have divergent thinking, which allows individuals to find creative solutions to problems that stump others. And then they've got this entrepreneurial drive. So, I mean, that's the one aspect of it. I mean, there's, of course, a hidden cost of this high-function ADHD. So
yes, what is it?
It's earning advanced degrees, climbing this corporate ladder or running businesses, but you're then masking these severe internal struggles. Mm. And that's what you call severe high-function ADHD. So some of these successful adults work twice as hard or put in many more hours than their peers just to stay organized and meet deadlines. And then they land up falling into a cycle of burnout because they then land up relying on last-minute panic, perfectionism, and their adrenaline goes up to complete these tasks that they could have done prior to this.
Okay, so in the interest of time, I want to move on to treatments. Before I do that, Anonymous says, I need and enjoy having lots and lots of things going on at once, both at home and at work. I'm stimulated by working on many things at once, but I usually make my deadlines and have learned to keep a diary. So that's obviously exactly what you're talking about. But, Ilana says, how is a pulmonologist so incredibly clever, a genius?
I don't think it's clever or genius. I just think it's living what everybody else is living, you know?
Yeah, like living in the real world.
What the ability of this podcast or this radio show has allowed us to do is to learn new things, read up about it. Like a lot of research goes into these things.
Hours. Anton works for hours on each podcast, and it's brilliant because we all learn from it.
And not only do you, I learn from it. Mm. I mean, and I bring it into my daily practice in so many different ways. So it's such an incredible privilege to be able to do this.
Amazing that. Really, really amazing. Okay, let's talk medication. How do stimulant medications work, and are they safe?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the very, very big questions of 2026. You know, that's been pushed out. So if you look at all of these different types of stimulants and things, you'll hear all these terms, Concerta, Vyvanse, blah, 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 blah. Mm. So a stimulant medication actually increases your levels of those two key hormones that we were talking about, those two key chemicals, dopamine and noradrenaline. So in a brain with ADHD, these neurotransmitters that are often underactive or they clear out too quickly, the medication boosts their presence. So they improve communication between the brain cells. And that enhances your ability to focus, to regulate impulses, and manage behavior. It's almost like a boosting brain messaging system. So your brain relies on these chemical messengers, these neurotransmitters, to pass signals between the neurons in the brain. And then these stimulants target those areas of the brain which are responsible for executive function, organization, and attention. And they do this through two important mechanisms. The one is called a blocking reuptake mechanism. So the medication actually stops the neurons in the brain from absorbing dopamine and noradrenaline too quickly. So it actually keeps the chemicals active in the gaps between the brain cells for a longer duration. And then certain of the stimulants actually prompt your brain to release high amounts of these neurotransmitters. And this got a huge impact on behavior and focus because when your dopamine and noradrenaline levels are optimized, your brain's brakes function more effectively. So there's many more notable shifts that occur. You get higher task engagement, reduced hyperactivity, filtered distractions. It's extremely important, you know. So the stimulants that we all are very familiar with,
All the same class?
Two different chemical categories.
Okay.
So methylphenidate is a one class. That's your Ritalin or your Concerta.
Okay.
And amphetamines are things like Vyvanse. And they work differently considering on the different format of the lifestyle or the condition you're trying to treat. So the ones that cause immediate release, a fast-acting Ritalin, for example, it takes about 45 to 60 minutes to take effect, but then it wears off very quickly within about 3 to 6 hours, and that will often require multiple doses during the day. whereas you get the extended release ones like your Vyvanse, and they use actually advanced delivery coatings around the tablet to release the medication slowly throughout the day, and that provides continuous symptom management for about 8 to 12 hours. And they're highly effective. The studies have shown that about 70 to 80% of individuals experience fewer ADHD symptoms with it. And you asked a very pertinent question, are they safe? And there's no doubt they are generally safe and highly effective for treating ADHD. But there are safety and medical screens that need to be done. So you've got to look at cardiovascular health. You know, generally in adults before prescribing, doctors do an ECG because you've got to rule out underlying cardiac conditions. When used as directed, they don't increase the risk of future substance abuse. They actually help stabilize the brain and prevent that. And there's no risk of serious life-threatening adverse effects from using them. Well, they're not addictive if you use them as prescribed. So in other words, if you take more than you should be taking, they become addictive. And there's are side effects from them. We all know that. Some of them reduce appetite and
cause temporary weight loss. Just nothing.
Some of them cause trouble falling asleep and insomnia, or mild headaches and stomach aches, and some cause jitteriness and heightened irritability.
Yep. What about personality? Because often parents say that they are so worried to put their kids on medication. Does it change personality?
Sure. So, you know, when they're used at the right level or the right dosage, these stimulant medications do not alter the person's core fundamental personality. Rather, they'll temporarily change the behavior because they manage the disruptive ADHD symptoms like impulsivity, hyperactivity, and inattention. And this allows an individual's true personality to emerge.
Ah, okay. So it actually is your personality.
Yeah.
It is at 10 to the hour of 7. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your weekly checkup with me and Dr. Anton Meiberg. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to answer the last of your questions. And I'm going to go through a whole lot of rapid fire questions for Anton. 061-895-1019.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 18:51. Roz, I do see your message. I'm going to try and get to it, but I just want to cover some of the areas that we wanted to first. Okay, so I want to talk about non-medication treatments. And let's just go through a whole bunch: behavioral therapy, ice baths, coaching, coaching, exercise, sleep, nutrition.
All right, so ADHD is not only managed with medication. You have to use a structured building habit in order to modify environments and optimize this brain health.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most important things for that is your behavioral therapy and your ADHD coaching. And behavioral therapy encompasses things like cognitive behavioral therapy, because this helps reframe your negative thought patterns, it manages your emotional dysregulation, and it builds emotional coping mechanisms. You do things like executive function coaching, which focus on practical, goal-directed behavior, accountability, and time management skills. And then something called DBT, which is dialectical behavior therapy. And that produces special skills training to manage intense emotional outbursts, impulsivity. So when you look at something like an ice bath, for instance, okay, ice baths or cold water therapy, these trigger a massive surge in focus-enhancing neurotransmitters. So they mimic the effect of your stimulant sort of medications.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Do ice baths work or not?
So they definitely play a role. They mimic the effects of stimulant medications.
Really?
And they help regulate the nervous
system. While you're in the ice bath, because you can't think of anything else because your brain shuts down.
I think your medications are worn off. So science actually shows that you get a dopamine spark. So that works with the ADHD brain.
So that actually,
because it causes a boost, and it increases motivation. So it works on the dopamine, and then you get a noradrenaline surge because it improves your attention and it decreases your hyperactivity and it limits impulsivity. So these things definitely help with executing function, mental calmness, and mood improvement. The other things you can look at are things like lifestyle and biological interventions. So physical exercise. that will increase your dopamine. You know, we say you get euphoric from exercising. Increase your dopamine and your noradrenaline levels.
So you're actually really saying healthy ways to increase your dopamine. Yeah. Not the quick fix, not the shopping or the gambling or something like that, but actually healthy ways like exercise.
Sleep hygiene. You stable that circadian rhythm with good sleep cycles. And, of course, nutritional support. Lean proteins build better neurotransmitter building blocks.
Right.
Of course, environment, this is very important, especially in today's age, environmental and educational strategies, school accommodations, allowing children to implement different things. In other words, offering extra test time, quiet testing rooms, and preferential seating. These things are very, very important.
So I've just skimmed Roz's. It's too long to read, but I can tell you, Roz, I'm going to check with Dr. Anton Marburg afterwards. But everything I've heard from this conversation, you are ADHD, and you would benefit from medication. And that's a non-medical opinion.
You're talking about me or you?
Well, you and me. But Roz as well. I'll read it to you later. And Anton is questioning your explanation about Vavan's slower release. It might be incorrect. He says there's an extra part of the molecule. I think it's an amino acid that takes the body longer to remove. He is going to recheck that. But either way, we love that. We love being a challenge. So if that is the case, that'll be that's great. True or false? Sugar causes ADHD.
That would be extremely false. It doesn't cause ADHD, but there is a relationship between sugar and ADHD, because if someone's got dysregulated dopamine reward system, the sugar will trigger an immediate release of dopamine in the brain. So people with ADHD are more likely to crave and seek out these sugary foods.
That is so interesting. ADHD can be cured.
No. Unfortunately, false. It cannot be cured.
You can't outgrow it.
And you cannot outgrow it.
Everyone has a little ADHD.
I hate that. It's like saying everyone has a little bit of depression, or everyone has a little bit of...
So you don't have the you, so exactly, you don't. You can be sad. It doesn't mean you're depressed. No. It's not clinical.
So everyone can experience an ADHD type of behavior, like for you getting easily distracted, or you misplace your keys, or procrastinate. That doesn't mean you are ADHD.
Right. Yeah, okay, I get that. I hear it. The biggest misconception about ADHD...
I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that a person with ADHD is lazy. They are looking for trouble. They have got a character flaw. Or they just generally don't give a damn about other people's feelings.
Incredible. Okay. And one thing that you want people to take away from this session tonight.
Yeah, I think that it's just to know that ADHD is not a personal failure. It's not a character flaw or a simple lack of all power.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lack of intelligence or laziness or just a childhood phase. I think that's even more important, because it's definitely being diagnosed more and more in adults. And even more important, it's not a result of bad parenting. You know, these are all neurodevelopmental things that actually are real, you know. And your kids are not going to outgrow it. And, you know, it's not from bad discipline. There's so many different things to look at that could be contributing to this.
That is where we leave it. Unfortunately, next week there won't be a weekly checkup. Dr. Anton Marburg is traveling, but we will be back the week after that. Have a fantastic evening, and I'll be back with you tomorrow morning for the Morning Mayhem, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.